remain silent.
Translation. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear King, after hearing Sri Prakriti's statement, Lord Shiva, the most powerful personality whose knowledge is fathomless, simply smiled and remained silent. And all the members of the assembly followed the Lord by not saying anything." See, the Buddhist process in criticizing Lord Shiva is somewhat mysterious and cannot be understood by a common man. Now let me help you by giving you a little background. Lord Shiva was sitting in an assembly of great saintly persons, and Parvati, his wife, was at that time on his lap, and he embraced her. So Shiva Ketu came into this assembly seeing this scene and said, "Lord Shiva, whose hair is matted on his head, has certainly undergone great austerities and penances. Indeed, he is the president in the assembly of strict followers of Vedic principles. Nonetheless, midst of the cross, he is seated with his wife on his lap in the midst of saints and persons and is embracing her as if he were a shameless, ordinary human being." So, Shiva didn't say anything. He smiled, and the saints also smiled. Shiva Ketu's purpose in criticizing Lord Shiva is somewhat mysterious and cannot be understood by a common man. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, however, has made the following observation. Lord Shiva, being the most exalted Vaishnava and one of the most powerful demigods, is able to do anything he desires. Although he was externally exhibiting the behavior of a common man and not following etiquette, such actions cannot diminish his exalted position. The difficulty is that a common man seeing Lord Shiva's behavior might follow his example, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, yat acharati shrishthas tatat e sarojanaha sayat pramanam kurite lokastat anivastate. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow, and whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Common men might also criticize Lord Shiva, like Daksha, who suffered the consequences for his criticism. King Chitaketu desired that Lord Shiva cease this external behavior so that others might be saved from criticizing him and thus becoming offenders. Everyone thinks that Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the only perfect personality that the demigods, even such demigods as Lord Shiva, are inclined to improper social effects, he is an offender. Considering all this, King Shiva Ketu was somewhat harsh in his behavior with Lord Shiva. You understand, since the world always follows what a great man does, this behavior of Lord Shiva, which was certainly all right for him because he can just overstep etiquette, might get followed by ordinary people. This is why Chita Ketu wanted to present to Lord Shiva that his behavior is somewhat, it is not so considerate, it needs to be evaluated, such to display such a behavior in public. Therefore, this somewhat harsh behavior for Shiva. Lord Shiva, who is always deep in knowledge, could understand Shita Ketu's purpose, and therefore he was not at all angry. Rather, he simply smiled and remained silent. The members of the assembly surrounding Lord Shiva could also understand Shiva Keta's purpose. Consequently, following the behavior of Lord Shiva, they did not protest. Instead, following their master. They remained silent. But the members of the assembly thought that Shiva Keta had blasphemed Lord Shiva. They would certainly have left at once, blocking their ears with their hands. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimata Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitya Namine Namaste Saraswate Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pracharine Sthane
persons who are strongly entrapped by the consciousness of enjoying material life and who have therefore accepted as their leader or guru a similar blind man attached to external sense objects cannot understand that the goal of life is to return home, back to Godhead and engage in the service of Lord Vishnu. As blind men, guided by another blind man, miss the right path and fall into a ditch, materially attached men led by another material attached man, are bound by the ropes of fruitive labor. Material desires and trying to fulfill them, which are made of very strong cords. They're bound by the ropes of fruitive labor, which are made of very strong cords, and they continue again and again in materialistic life, suffering the threefold misery. So the conditioned soul is certainly bound by the laws of material nature, and is forced to act without having the chance to really escape this. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find a very interesting shloka which says, Krishna Nitya Das Jiva Taha Bhuli Gela Edo Shemaya Tara Galaya Bandila. Because the soul has forgotten that he is the eternal servant of Krishna, Maya has chained him by the neck. Like a bound animal, the conditioned soul is urudhani bata by the heavy ropes of material existence. It is bound. In the Bhagavad Gita, we also hear how this bondage is very difficult to overcome. Devi Shesha Gunamayi Bhamamaya Duratyaya. The bondage of the three modes of material nature is described as Duratyaya, difficult to overcome. Material existence is also called Durga. Ga means to go, and dual means very difficult. It's very difficult to leave material existence because one is bound by these three gunas, which are like ropes. In the Gita, it is further explained, Prakriti kriyamanani gunai karamani sadamasha, that all the activities done by the conditioned souls are not really done by the conditioned soul, but they are like puppets on the string, in other words, controlled by the three modes of material nature, Benjamin. And only due to ahankara, that is false ego, that the conditioned soul thinks himself to be the doer of activities which are done actually by the laws of material nature. I think the example of Chaitanya Charitamrita makes it very graphic. If someone is bound by the neck on a rope, he's not doing anything. Please remember, maybe from your childhood days, when you see these men who have dogs, they have bound the dog with a hundeline, a dog line, and they just drag him around. You know, sometimes you find this little poof poodles in, and the old man is dragging him around, and he's not really going anywhere. He's dragged around. So this is how the conditioned soul's existence is described, pulled around by the modes of material nature, not at all free. Now it's very interesting, and this brings us to the discussion, because we as devotees, somehow when we hear this, it doesn't move our hearts so much. The young devotees who just joined, like Bhakti Niko, you can see it makes a lot of sense to him to understand how one is dragged by the neck, because he just came from material life where he understood that. Then this concert, then go there, then do this, then this girl came and made this offer, and here this happens, and here one has to, so like, one knows one is dragged, one knows one is not free, because one doesn't know his self-interest. This being dragged around just continues, continues, continues. But let us now hear something which will
put all of you in great ecstasy, hopefully. It is how to get out of this. In the Gita, the Bhagavatam, the remedy is given like this: Naishang Matista Vadurukramangim Vishyad Yanata Padamo Yadata Mahiyatam Paravajo Vishekam Niskim Sananam Navinita Yavat. Unless they clear upon the bodies the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, completely freed from material contamination, person very much inclined towards materialistic life cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, who is glorified for his uncommon activities. Only by becoming Krishna conscious and taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord in this way can one be freed from material contamination. So, to make it more clear, what drags us around in the material world is a knot in the heart, the knot of that false ego. And someone who is bound by this knot has not at all any liberty to do or act according to his desires. The rope which binds him is made of three modes, of which especially tama and rajagun, or the mode of ignorance and passion, are very dangerous. The effect of the modes of these two lower modes of material nature in the heart is that there is an arising, I should say, of lust, of greed, of anger. And these things are strong pushing forces which should possibly push or drag us, you could also say, through material existence. So it is described that the only way to get out of this is to be connected, to smear upon the body the dust coming from the lotus feet of the pure devotee. So I was thinking a lot what this means. It has three meanings actually. The first meaning is the literal meaning. There are three substances which are extremely powerful in this world. It is the remnant of the food left by the pure devotee, the water which has washed his feet, and the dust from his lotus feet. This is so because the pure devotee in his carries Krishna in his heart, so things which are in connection with him are Krishnaized. The pure devotee, in other words, something which is in contact with him, gets also spiritual qualities. So therefore the remnants and the dust and the water which have been in contact with the Lord, pure devotee, are also, so to say, spiritualized because the pure devotee has Krishna in his heart. So this is a literal meaning. Now to take the dust from the lotus feet of a pure devotee has another meaning, which Prabhupada gives in the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It means to hear his instructions and follow them. And here a very, very interesting consideration comes up. When we are in contact with a pure devotee, we can have, many different visions, but there are two visions which are extremely important. One is the Bhogya Darshan and the other is the Sevya Darshan. Dasha means vision, and Bhogya means sense enjoyment, and the other, Sevya, means service. See, when a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada, when he comes to this world, he wants to give us something, that is love of Krishna. However, we, being bound by strong material ropes, do not really want to have love of Krishna. We come to the Guru and we want something else. We want a wife maybe, or a mush. A mush means husband. Or we want a safe situation in this world. We want material benefits, like a peaceful mind, money, just to live a little better in the world. This is very much spread in India, where the people approach you and say Ashivad. Ashivad for most of the people means material blessings. There's an amusing little detail for your information. Prabhupada was once riding in the train and a few Indians entered his compartment saying, "I want an Ashivad, Maharaj, Ashivad." And Srila Prabhupada answered in his very straightforward way, "Yes, I bless you that you can become like them," pointing at his shaved up disciples. So men didn't feel very comfortable with this blessing and quickly excused themselves from the presence of Srila Prabhupada. So if a pure devotee should give his disciples material blessings, then this would be very, very bad on his side. It says, a sannyasi must not present allurements of material benefits to gather many disciples, nor should he unnecessarily read many books or give discourses as a means of livelihood. He must never attempt to increase material opulences unnecessarily. It says here, a sannyasi is prohibited from making disciples through such material allurements. This is a very interesting point. So when we approach the pure devotee, we have to see that our vision is all right. There is a strong warning presented in one of our scriptures. I want to read this to you. Which speaks of a very bogus relationship which is based on this bogya darshan. It says, many gurus take advantage of their disciples and plunder them. They exploit their disciples for sex and use them to amass wealth. But a guru who can remove the miseries of his disciples is very rare. This is from the Purana, Purana Vakya, it says. Do you understand? This type of exchange is condemned, actually. The guru should not take money or sense enjoyment from his disciples, but he should take the miseries away. Now, this is very different. First of all, it's very rare to find a disciple who does not want material benefits from his spiritual master, and then it's very rare to find a spiritual master who does not take the money but the misery or just worship from his disciple, but who takes the misery away. This is a bona fide relationship. This takes, the Bhogya Darshan is not good. The second is called Sevya Darshan. That's when the disciple tries to humbly approach his spiritual master with all the ingredients, it says, which are necessary for yajna. How to understand this? Well, the Mundaka Upanishad, he says that when we approach a spiritual master who is situated in the Guru Parampara, we should approach him with all the ingredients for yajna in our hand. I just want to find this verse for all of you because it's very, very important. Please excuse me, just make this noise. Wie heißt nochmal der Vers von der Mundaka Upan? Tasmat Gurum Prabhadeta? Nee, sag mal, Tadvigyayatam, muss sein. Tadvigyayatam, wie Tadvasandava. Tadvigyayatam. Mit D, nicht? Ja. Yes, hier. When one wants to know, it's Tadvijayatam Sagarum Eva Vigatshe Samitpani Shoti Vyam Brahmanishtam. One who wants to know the absolute truth scientifically must approach a bona fide spiritual master and offer him everything required for sacrifice. Such a spiritual master must be fixed in the truth, having heard it in disciplic succession. So when we go to the spiritual master, we should take the things necessary for sacrifice. In this age of Kali, the yajna is Sankirtan yajna, the highest yajna. In other words, we should help our spiritual master to preach Krishna consciousness. This is how a bona fide disciple approaches a spiritual master. He does not come to him, in other words, for material benefits, but comes for him to him to be helpful in the mission of the spiritual master, to be helpful in the yajna. Only if a disciple approaches in this way, he is well situated, so to say. And then he is come to him, in other words, for material benefits, but comes for him to him to be helpful in the mission of the spiritual master, to be helpful in the yajna. Only if a disciple approaches in this way, he is well situated, so to say. And then he is called, then he has the Sevya Darshan, that means the mood to serve, and not the Bhogya Darshan, that is the mood to enjoy. If we do not learn to develop the Sevya Darshan in relationship to our spiritual master, it will not be possible for us to really understand what is the meaning of Krishna consciousness. It will not be possible, really, no, and in fact, it will be quite difficult. So now, of course, this means if we go to a spiritual master to be instrument, so to say, in yajna, means we should find the proper personality where we can surrender. Here it says in the Hari Bhakti Vilas what we should look for in the spiritual master. Kripa Sindhu Su Sampuna sarva sadvo pakaraka nishpriha sarvata siddha sarva vidya visharada sarva sankshaya sanchitta nalaso guru arita. One who is an ocean of mercy, who is fulfilled in all respects, who has all good qualities, who works for the benefit of all souls, who is free from lust, who is perfect in all respects, who is well versed in the scriptures, who knows the science of Krishna, who can remove all the doubts of his disciples, and who is always alert in the service of Krishna, he is known as a genuine guru. This is what we should. Why shouldn't we not surrender to such a personality? Why shouldn't we not have faith? Why shouldn't we not follow what he tells us? Why should we remain bound in our self-inflicted miseries of the selbstzugefügten Leid? That's a question. So our problem is, I want to wind the lecture up, our problem is we are bound by these ropes of material nature which force every movement out of us. We think we are free, but we are not free. One very great Prabhupada I've read this morning, a lecture of Srila Prabhupada on this Nate Vidu Svatagatani Vishnu Shloka, and he said we are bound by nature's laws, and the real problem which we have is we have to get a new material body. We have to give up this material body and get a new material body. And the thing is, why is it a problem? Because really it is not necessary. We are an eternal soul, part and parcel of Krishna. We have a transcendental body full of bliss and knowledge, and it is eternal. Just look at your material bodies now and see what a bad deal you made. Just imagine, you are eternal. Can you imagine this? You know, as children we always wanted I always wanted to be eternal, I remember. Never die, because this means no fear. You are eternal, you are full of bliss. This sounds attractive, isn't it? And you are full of knowledge. So the problem is, as long as we remain bound in the mind, bound in all respects by the three modes of material nature, we will have to take on a new material body and a new material body and a new material body. It's like an infection. If you infect the modes of material nature, the disease you will get is that you will have to get a new material body. So now I know you are all young people, you never think of death. You never think that death is a problem. But I want to read to you a little bit what Dr. Nuland says about this subject. Dr. Nuland, who is he? Sherwin Nuland, a Yale surgeon, this is a chirurg from the Yale University, takes a look at six of the ways we are most likely to die. Do you want to hear what are your six most likely causes of death? The point is, all these are not very dignified. It's nicht sehr würdevoll, so zu sterben. Also, heart attack, number one. And stroke. Was ist Stroke, Petra? Auch ein Herzanfall. Old age. Where you become senile. I just heard from a disciple of mine in Hungary that now she is at home to take care of her mother, who has a blood, something very dangerous, and she also has to take care of her grandmother. You know, her mother is dying and needs her at this present moment. So the grandmother, she just told me, what should I do? She said, every day she doesn't want to dress. She wants to run out on the street without dress. And she never puts shoes on when she goes out. And that's all. It's very difficult. So this is called old age. Then Alzheimer's and other dementia. Was ist die Alzheimer-Krankheit eigentlich? Man vergisst alles? Das ist tatrig sozusagen. Absolute Tatrigkeit. Alzheimer-Krankheit. Heißt die auch in Deutsch so? Alzheimer? Man vergisst also alles. And other dementia means other Zerfallserscheinung. Trauma, you know, one. AIDS and cancer. These are usually the six most common causes of death, or we couldn't really say causes with our spiritual knowledge, we would say they accompany the scenario of death. So Yudhishthira explains that it's very wonderful that although this is what expects all of us, we don't seem to care about it. He says it's the most wonderful thing in the universe that although everyone knows he is going to die, just no one cares about it. The Maya's heavy influence. We don't really think about it at all. Doesn't concern us. Well, that's for the old people. It's not for me. I'm not an old person, therefore death is not for me. This is how the psychology of the conditioned soul goes. Little does he know. So let me sum everything up. Again for you, we are bound by the three modes, material nature, that's a dangerous position. We can get out by taking the dust of the lotus feet of the pure devotee on our head. This is twofold. It is in a literal sense, and it is also in a other sense that we should follow his instructions. The Upanishad, this Mundakya Upanishad, I believe. Let me just see again. The Mundaka Upanishad tells us exactly how we should approach a bona fide spiritual master. The wrong way is with a Bhoga Darshan, to get a material situation for us and live a good life. Not possible in this material world. The right way is the Sevya Darshan. So come with him and offer him everything required for sacrifice. This life is not meant for enjoyment. We want to go to Krishna. We have to do sacrifice. Tapasya. We must decide. It's spiritual life. And it is different than material life altogether. So I want to thank you for listening and end here, because we do have, I think all of us have full agendas for today in devotional service. But if you do have any question, please feel free to ask them now. Benjamin.
They are completely conditioned in two modes. Yes. Which
are moments, the plans of two modes. Yeah. Instead, actually, desire for sense gratification don't exist. Actually, just this condition, if we are conditioned,
real desire for
sense gratification
is not.
It's not our desire, at least. It is produced by the modes of material nature.
But this brings us to a very important discussion which Gadadhar is working on right now. In other words, is desire an activity? I don't know if this is really, I don't want to put something into your work which you are not doing, but the question really is, is the desire, how much is the soul connected with the activities in the material world? Is it connected by desire? This is your question. Or is the desire itself already a product of the material world and doesn't come from the material, from the soul? We hear that the soul always has a little independence. It can desire Krishna, and it can also misuse that independence and desire Maya. Now, once that you have stepped over the line, or the soul has stepped over the line of not desiring any longer Krishna and enters into the material world, then also its specific desires are so polluted by the material energy that only the force of the desire is the soul. It comes from the soul, the desire. Without the soul there is no desire. But the specific forms of desire are really so much conditioned by the laws of material nature. You can, however, still take the desire back. It is very difficult to take it back from the material, you know, from this contamination, if you are in the modes of passionate ignorance. Urudhannibada, you're really, really, really controlled. Therefore, sometimes devotees who want to advance in Krishna consciousness say, I don't feel free to desire properly. Do you know this? The desire sometimes seems to not be there for Krishna, or we cannot really get our desire together. And this means we are most properly controlled by the modes of material nature, or we are swimming in the urine of offenses. I'm really sorry, I know. I want to tell you something very practical. During this last day of Vrindavan, I made a very practical realization of this. Srila Prabhupada says, going to Vrindavan gives one impetus. You understand impetus? To go back home, back to Godhead. So when you sit, when you are in Vrindavan after some time, you feel how your real desires come forth. They are so strong. You're just prepared to chain yourself onto some desire tree so that no one can drag you out of Vrindavan, you know. desires become extremely strong. I mean, I don't want to say that I want to stay in Vrindavan. No, I want to do service in the West for Srila Prabhupada's mission, because I want to try to please him in this lifetime with little insignificant servizio. But I'm just saying, the desire for Krishna becomes very strong all of a sudden. It's possible, in other words. Any one of you who doesn't desire Krishna very strongly at the present moment, you are sick. No, sick sounds so offensive. Diseased. Or crank. Something went. It's not all right. It's a problem. So one must rise from these dangerous modes of passion and ignorance come into the atmosphere where we are again more free to desire. It's interesting, Srila Prabhupada analyzes this in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, second chapter. I will read it to you so that you can hear it in the original text, so to say. He says, most of the people, most of us, are not really desirous to go back home, back to Godhead. The Lord is reciprocally respondent to his devotees. In other words, if you put something in, Krishna puts something in. When he sees that a devotee is completely sincere in getting admittance to the transcendental service of the Lord and has thus become eager to hear about him, the Lord acts from within the devotee in such a way that the devotee may easily go back to him. The Lord is more anxious to take us back into his kingdom than we can desire. Most of us do not desire at all to go back to Godhead. Only a very few men want to go back to Godhead. But anyone who desires to go back to Godhead, Sri Krishna helps in all respects. You missed that last part. I will read it for you again. But anyone who desires to go back to Godhead, Sri Krishna helps in all respects. He wants to see that desire coming up. Then he helps us in devotional service and so on. Because it really needs Krishna to free us from the contaminations. Only by his mercy it will work. He will enter their heart and he will help. He will take his broom. But this is not how, he doesn't have a broom. What he does is, he puts his lotus feet at that place from where all these material desires come, and with his lotus palatski, his lotus toe, he stops it. It comes rumgesprudelt wird gestoppt. All right, Benjamin. If you feel at the present moment you don't have a desire of your own, it just goes. Stop it. All right, Benjamin. If you feel at the present moment you don't have a desire of your own, it just goes under the modes. If this should be. Of course you asked it more in a philosophical sense, but let us apply it to your life. You feel, my desire for Krishna is not strong. It means you are not situated in a very sattvic or calm and alert life. Alert means conscious of every of these, of your, the details of your human existence. And it means you're more controlled by the modes of passion, so on. And you have to do something to get out of these. Then you will see how your desire becomes stronger for Krishna. Oh, we have explanations for everything. But when are we ever going to live in Krishna? Krishna. He has a very nice book, that's new. The Daily News from Sasvarupa Goswami. All things fail without Krishna. Very interesting. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Sri Gauri Jai ki jai, Gauri Premanandi Hari Bol.
Maharaj. Jai.